The following program may contain language. Discretion is advised.
Can you tell me a little something? Can you make it extraordinary? Can anybody out there tell me what it means?
We only talk about the many emotions.
Bring me everything that you got, and I'll be everything that I need. Can't believe that we got through this. Now it gets worse.
Looking back on it.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Looking Back on It. I am here today with the always incomparable, the very lovely, very handsome, my sweet little onion. Peel you away every layer.
Oh, thank you, Billy Regal.
Yeah, but I'm here with my co-host and my best friend, Matt.
What's
from AWTF.
With the brother.
With the brother. Yeah, so what have you been up to this week, Matt?
Oh, man. Watching my beautiful Maple Leafs just choke and crash and burn.
Losers, all of them.
Losers! Just kidding. Oh, my God.
It's always an up and down being a Toronto fan. What can you do?
Mostly down.
Yeah.
Mostly down. Mostly.
Oh, man.
But,
Well, by the time this comes out, I'm sure they will be out of the second round, hopefully.
That'll be game seven. Yeah, let's go. They're down 3-0 as we speak today. So,
well, this episode doesn't come out for 3 weeks, but yeah, I get
okay, maybe we're planning the parade right now. Yeah, totally. Not cleaning out the lockers.
Oh, man. No, we both of us just finished a nice long stint at work, so both did 7 days.
60-something hours in a week, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was a hell of a week. But now we have a day off, so we're sitting around having some drinks and
hell yeah,
brother. And after watching the game last night, we were kind of discussing, hey, maybe we should do another Looking Back on It episode. And we thought, no better choice for us than an album that we definitely talk about a lot. Like when we're mentioning like albums that we both kind of enjoy, it's pretty much between this one or what's the name of the At the Drive-In album? The first one.
Oh gosh.
Is it Relationship of Command?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's either that one or like Full Collapse is pretty much. And we're doing Full Collapse by Thursday.
Yeah. Talking about Thursday on a Monday.
Talking about Thursday on a Monday. You got it. But this album, I don't know. This album's definitely different in terms of like, I guess they're really not different in the choices I've made so far in the past, I guess. But
for what song or app for albums for this show?
Yeah. It's technically right in the pocket of what.
It's a 180 from Rihanna.
Oh, yeah, it's a huge 180 from Rihanna. I forgot about that. That was only like
that
three
was a thing
ago.
That happened, yes. Yeah.
But I think right now is like when this one's coming out, I think the last episode I just did was with Eric Trunk. I did From Death to Destiny by Asking Alexandria.
Nice.
Which is like 2010 metalcore, not even like remotely in the same space as this album. So even still a 180 from that.
What genre do you think this album Full Collapse by Thursday would fall into? Like emo core or something?
Post-hardcore. Yeah, this is typical post-hardcore. This is what started, I think, the whole post-hardcore movement.
Right.
You had like a lot of bands. Even technically, I guess you could put like, you know, Saves the Day in there. They're more, I guess, pop punk, but you know, Saves the Day, maybe Taking Back Sunday could also, they're a little bit different.
Rise Against.
Yeah. They're definitely like a form. They're like a more punk, but like, yeah, they still have post-hardcore elements.
The guitars are like similar a little bit, whereas like that, just the sound, I don't know.
Yeah. It's kind of just like that, like grungy. Right.
Yeah.
By the way, I do have the guitar with me today, so I will be just playing riffs intermittently as soon as somebody talks about something, because this is an album that it kind of came out when I was we talked about it during the Toxicity. It's the same year as Toxicity, right? So I was just starting to like really get into guitar and like, is, you know, I was trying to learn more songs every day. And
this album was 2001.
Yep, 2001.
I don't think I heard it until maybe like a year or two later. Something like that. I was probably in like grade 11 or 12, I think, the first time I heard this album.
So I was in the same boat, actually. I didn't hear this album until 2004 because I found War All the Time by them, which was their second album.
After Full Collapse.
And that was like, because they had songs like that were all over, like Much Loud. So they had a song called Signals Over the Air that had a video that got airplay. They had a song called For the Workforce Drowning, which is like the best riff of all time, because it's just an open D and it's just That's all it is the entire time. And then it just goes into like an actual song. But
God bless Much Loud. How many bands did Much Loud turn like kids from our generation onto back then? You just put it on and just like, you never knew what you were going to get, and like just find songs and bands that you would have never heard about otherwise.
Also, I am going to say, I think 2001 is the most renaissance year for albums, because we talked about Toxicity was that year.
Yeah.
This album was that year. And I did The Shape of Punk to Come already, which was also a 2001 album. And that's an album like I wasn't listening to when they came out. I always found them out later, but I think they all kind of stand in their own right. Like for each genre, they're kind of like the top of like the pinnacle sort of thing.
Wasn't Alexis on Fire self-titled that year?
Also 2001, also a pinnacle, you know, changing, because that's post-hardcore. Actually, I would say they're post-hardcore.
I almost want to say Make Yourself by Incubus was that year too. Or
probably,
something.
Most likely.
Around there.
Yeah, probably 2001. Makes sense. Back when they got out of like friggin' just turntables.
All the songs are about magic mushrooms.
Yeah. But I'll give you a quick brief history here on Full Collapse before we get into this. But
started on a Wednesday.
Yeah. No. starting on a Wednesday.
Sorry.
We're off to a bad start. Full Collapse is the second studio album by American post hardcore band Thursday. Not Monday, Thursday. The album was released in April of 2001 through Victory Records, who were really like one of the biggest record labels at that time for like post-hardcore and metal and stuff like that. Like they did like Before the Burial. Is that the name of the band? Or After the Burial? I think one of their original albums. They did Comeback Kid, Taking Back Sunday's first album. Like they were on Victory Records and stuff like that.
That was a big one, Taking Back Sunday.
Yeah, Tell All Your Friends. Like that album was like huge, right? So, yeah. And unfortunately, like right after this album came out, before they even wrote the next one, started recording, they left the record label. They were having issues with the founder and owner of it, Tony Brummel. I don't know the story behind him. I didn't really go too far into detail on it. I have a feeling I'm going to find some things I don't really want to talk about anyways. If you have bands like Taking Back Sunday and Thursday all leaving them within the same time frame.
Jim Ross always says it's about cash or creative.
Yeah, exactly.
It's probably one or the other.
Oh, man. But the album was produced by Sal Villanueva, and that name, I guess, isn't really super like well known in like the hardcore world or punk world, but he did this album, and he also did Tell All Your Friends by Taking Back Sunday.
He was the producer?
He was the producer on both those albums.
Right.
So the only reason why the name stuck out to me when I first read it was because on the bonus edition of Tell All Your Friends, it had the Ballad of Sal Villanueva. And that was an extra song that they didn't have on the rest of it, and they had recorded after.
Okay.
Yeah. But it was definitely, I don't know. He knows what he's doing. I got to tell him that. I don't know if the band is having like a lot of creative control and he's just there to slap his name on it at the end of the day. But like usually a producer is like to give you that input of, you know, how you wouldn't necessarily see those songs originally.
Like, it's a symbiotic nature, like relationship, right? Yeah. It's kind of like sometimes you need like a third person view, like someone like outside of your bubble to like look at what you're doing and give you some input and advice.
Well, pretty much. And like they help you shape the songs that will be on that release, like in a different light. Like, have you ever tried, you know, thinking about putting a drop there and then like putting a bit, you know, it's little finishing touches that you might not be able to see as the artist, right?
So, absolutely. Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe he does know what he's doing. But while this album wasn't like considered an amazing commercial success, like it only peaked at like 178 on the Billboard top 200, didn't even crack the top 100, right? So I guess when it came out, it wasn't really that much of a, you know, money draw, you
like
know,
commercial success. Like when we talked about doing this, I one of my first thoughts was, what's the one biggest song off the album?
Yeah.
And there wasn't really one that like really, really jumped out. I guess there's maybe one or two.
It's Understanding in a Car Crash. That is the most like listened to Thursday song of all time.
Yeah.
And it's one that if like you know somebody who's a Thursday fan, they probably cite that song. Because that song was like, it got bigger after, I think.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Looking at YouTube views when I was streaming the album, and like a lot of it was like pretty low.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was like one song that was at like a million. I think it was like Cross Out the Eyes or something. So maybe Understanding was too.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing is with it that like a lot of these bands like still have like really great careers, but they kind of operate on like a, they're more like cult classic status, right?
Yeah. So
like Emery is a prime example of that. Like Emery was really nostalgic to me when they came out in 2004 and stuff like that. Like they had the album called The Week's End and it was like amazing. And like their second album came out and I was in grade 10. I'm like, this album's going to be so much better than the last one and this and that. But I would just go see them if they came to town just for nostalgia reasons.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? Like
nostalgia
like,
sells, man.
Like I might not always be listening to Emery. I might not always be listening to Thursday, but they're definitely going to be top up on the list for rotation. Like when I'm listening to songs, you know what I mean?
So, totally.
But this album straight up is just a classic Evil album. Possibly top 10 in most circles, I could say. Confidently. I think most people, if you're talking about like emo or post-hardcore, this should be top 10.
Yeah.
And it kind of shaped and influenced like many emo bands like going forward too. Like As Cities Burn, always cite this album. You know, My Chemical Romance, also cite this album, as well as Senses Fail, also from Jersey.
Yeah.
same as Thursday, right? So, and personally, like, if I'm talking just favorite albums by this band, this is it.
Yeah.
They have a lot. Like they've come out with quite a few over the years, and War All the Time is like a close second for me, like their second album, but this album is the best.
This is the only one that I'm particularly like familiar with at all. But it was one that was in my CD rotation in the car when I was a younger man, and this thing was always cranked to like 100 on the car stereo, just blasting. It rocks like right start to finish all the way through.
Absolutely. But why don't we get into it here, and let's get right into our picks, and let's go to Riff City.
Riff Rips and the Bass. Okay, Eric's let me go first here for Riff City.
Yeah. I'm interested to see what you picked, actually.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that Understanding in a Car Crash would be, like, the most famous song by them. Because for me, that's, like, there's that weird little intro, like, song, in quotes, I guess you could say, to start the album off. It's only, like, a 40-second, like, weird little build-up that they do, which sounds cool. I like it. But the album kicks off heavy with Understanding in a Car Crash with that initial riff right off the top. And that's kind of like whenever I do think of Thursday and this album, Full Collapse, that's kind of the first riff that always comes to my mind.
Oh, the nano.
Yeah,
that's a good riff. Yeah, that's a good riff.
And they loop that for like a lot of the song, but that's like always been over all these years kind of the signature lick that I think of when I think of Thursday. It might not be the most like intricate or crazy or whatever, but that lick is always like screamed like Thursday in my head when I think about them.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a no-brainer that song is like the number one most streamed, like most listened to song by them. That kind of makes sense to me because it's not as like experimental as the rest of the songs on the album.
Mm.
So it's a little bit more like a little bit more pop centric, I guess you could say.
It's catchy in that sense, right?
Yeah, super,
it's very
catchy.
Simple. It's just like hammering with an open string on whatever fret it is, but like it's a signature sound for me. And like I said, whenever I think of this album, that's usually the first lick that like comes to mind for me, the first riff.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because my pick for it is the entire intro and verse to I Am the Killer.
Nice.
And that is a song that I will 100% only think of as Thursday.
Mm.
So I'm going to actually play it out now because I forgot I have the guitar. I've just been sitting here with the guitar on my lap.
You want to dim the lights and light a candle?
Yeah, you should turn the lights down, turn the candles on. This is going to be Eric After Dark.
Eric Reed, everybody.
Yeah, but the intro riff is just so cool on it. Right, so just like
Bella.
Yeah. Just the weird like the
dissonance.
There's like that weird how do I explain it? I did write it down, hold on. This opening riff is essentially like what I think of with this band, but here's the weird part. So this was like one of the first songs I heard even before hearing War All the Time.
Mm.
And it was because I was like a buddy of mine, I think, gave me a burnt CD, and it was like a mix like
God,
CD sort of thing.
Burnt CDs.
You know what I'm saying? I know.
Take me back.
I know, take me back. And he gave me, and I think this was the first track on that CD.
Nice.
Sort of thing. Yeah. So it was like one of those things I was like, I just always remember it. But the layered guitars are just like signature to like their Thursday sound and voicing. So like it's like it's just the D, right? But he has like a he's like playing that really, but like it's two it's actually just two guitar tracks. Mm. And it kind of sounds like when you play it together, it has that D E on top of the D, so it's like and just goes, you know, give a little bit of bend and a little bit of flourish.
Yeah, the interplay with the guitars on this album, like, is so kick-ass because they like, harmonize with each other, like, so well. Like, one's always playing kind of, like, a D up high and one's playing one down low. Yeah. And they kind of, like, meld in between a little bit, going up and down, like, the key signature or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's, like, they always, like, manage to just complement each other so well with just, like, a wall of guitars that is just kicking ass.
Yeah, I mean, you also have like those little flourishing notes too. The it's so fun, so cool, and I don't know, just something about like when I hear that, it just gets me like so excited every time.
I was trying to think of the best way to describe the guitar sound when I was on my way over, and it's almost like if you turned like machetes into chainsaws, and you had like a machine gun shooting glass bullets, like the way this album is, with the distorted guitars, but then the clean guitars are like. Have that like glassy reverb to it a bit too.
See, that was the thing too, because like if you listen to like the, I can't really switch back between clean and distorted when I'm here when I'm playing this, but like the like that verse riff is it also another reason for the.
Yeah,
and it just
like, yeah.
Right, and it's like in like a. Sort of like a delayed, like sort of lead part.
Yeah, it's
like,
got a little echoey to it.
Yeah, like a heavy verb and delay and stuff to make it like sort of sound like a little bit clear, and then just right back into the, you know.
Yeah. That's such a classic formula for rock bands too, of like the quiet, like clean parts that go to the boom heavy, like. But like, I got to admit, I'm a sucker for it.
Yeah.
Like, I love just the release of going from those like quiet, clean parts to like full blown pedal to the metal with the distortion. Like, it gets me.
Well, and that's the thing too. It's like, I mean, I love the like dichotomy of like the two of them playing off each other. Like, it's like I always like when a band can do something well with dynamics, because it's very hard to do. Like, you can just use dynamics whenever you want to break up parts. Doesn't matter. But when it's done properly, there's something to be said for that.
Like, that was like the signature sound for Nirvana.
Yeah.
It was like stomping that fuzz box when the chorus is kicked on, and then he would go back to his like flange or delay or whatever he would use for his quieter verses and stuff, right?
Yep. Well, Dinosaur Jr., prime example.
Yeah.
You ever watch like Jay Maskus? He does like interviews.
I have not.
Okay, so they all kind of use the same fuzz box. So what they used to do, there was like an op amp sound, now it's called. Electro Harmonix makes the pedal.
Okay.
It's essentially their fuzz pedal. So what he'll do, like Jay Maskus, his clean tone is actually just an overdrive pedal. So an East River Drive or what's the Tube Screamer? 808, I think it's called.
I'm not sure.
I know you know like the one I'm talking about, the Ibanez one, right? So.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like.
The green one.
Yeah, pretty much. It gets even more confusing because East River Drive is also green, but it's Electro Harmonix version of that. So essentially that'll be like his clean channel will just be like an overdriven guitar. And then when he wants to like crank it, he cranks the fuzz pedal on top of that.
Yeah, right.
So that's like your extra, cause like fuzz pedals just like scream. Like when you do solos and stuff, it just, I do enjoy it. And Billy Corrigan is the main guy who came up with that pedal.
Yeah.
Because of his sound on, I want to say the first album, Zero? Was that the first album?
Siamese Dream.
Was that the first album? There was a song he did where he had like 140 guitar layers. I can't remember what it was.
Like all of their songs are like that. When they did Melancholy and Infinite Sadness.
That was the album.
Zero was a track on Melancholy. He literally like, they had the mixing board. It was like 100 guitar tracks.
Insane. So that was where they came up with the sound for like the op amp pedal. Because he was using that. The original Electro Harmonix op amp and that kind of sound that came with it. Like, you know how like Zero, right? That like super, like sounds like you have like six overdrive pedals on it for no reason.
Yeah. Imagine you're starting tracking like, okay, only 92 more takes.
And then
I'll be done this song.
Yeah. Can you imagine if you mess one up? You're just like, dude, I got to go home today.
No one's going to notice it in the mix, dude. They're going to notice.
They're going to notice. Oh, man. But that kind of rolls into our top three tracks here. And I did it, my first pick, you know, we'll go back and forth on it.
Sure.
So I'll throw you my first pick. And this first song was something that I hadn't heard until I actually started perusing the Victory Records website when it first came out. So, cause I didn't really know who they were until years after this album came out, right? Probably 3 years or 4 years later. Then I was starting to go back and listen to their stuff. And what I used to do was just sit on the Victory Records website and watch videos.
Nice.
That's what I did. I would watch videos and stream the albums on there. Right.
Mm.
So, but this song quickly became one of my favorite on the album because of the voicing on the chords. And it has this weird, I talked about it in my Spill Canvas episode, but, it's this key. It's a D minor key. And it just... You know what I mean? Right? It's all just... It's four notes. But you can pretty much just solo on that one key. And it's not even a real minor key. It's not anything. It's a mix between a pentatonic and a minor. So I guess a pentatonic minor
key. Well, if Spinal Tap has taught us anything, it's D minor is the saddest key.
It is the saddest key. But
the song's called Lick My Love Pump.
Oh my gosh. This is crazy, man.
Yeah, it's just a movie quote.
But yeah, the Jesus.
Oh, off the rails. Maybe
I canceled already.
I'm never gonna be invited back on this show.
I said that last time. I guess you're still back here. Oh man. You gotta keep coming in through the side window.
Yeah. Hey, Eric, you need a guest?
Oh man.
My bad, sorry, bro.
Yeah, no, all good. But this is definitely this song has one of my favorite riffs, and that's the pre-chorus riff.
Mm.
This is Paris and Flames, or the intro with.
Yeah.
Right? And the pre-chorus, then it goes into the. Right, you know what I mean?
Just that was going to be my other selection for Riff City.
It was my honorable mention.
Now, watching you play it now, I'm like, I should have picked that one.
That's such
a sick lick.
So it was my original choice, and then I deleted all my notes, and I said, you know what? It's I love that song too much.
Yeah.
The whole song to just pick just that part as the riff, right? So, because it is honestly just an amazing riff, and it's their whole song itself just flows so amazingly, though. And not to mention that crazy bridge. There's a bass line where the bassist is playing, and it's just mostly a lot of chords. He's just kind of strumming chords on the bass.
Yeah.
And that would make what's his name from Tool, Jason Chancellor, blush. Because oh, that's perfect. It's so it sounds like a Tool bass line. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it just that over top of the drum beat, it's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And It's just honestly an amazing, amazingly written song and well put together. Kudos to these guys, Jersey Boys for life. You know what I mean? So, what do you got for one of your picks? So we'll trade them up. We'll see as it decreasingly goes down how many times we both put understanding in a car crash.
That's not on my top three. That's not so.
Fair enough.
Spoiler alert. For me, I put A Hole in the World on this. It doesn't stand out above some of the other bigger songs, except for one part in it that I just absolutely love. Halfway through the song, near the end, there's kind of the whole thing comes right down. They bring it all down, and there's a little piano part in the middle of it there, and they got some dissonant chords going on. And I just felt that helps the song stand out in such a unique way on that album, because it's really the only break, I guess you could say, or the only kind of dip before it comes back in full blast, cranked up to 11.
Cranked up to 11. This song's called Love Pump.
Excuse me. Sorry. But yeah, I really like that song, and I wanted to pick something that wasn't just some of the other bigger tunes, but the other two I have kind of are. But there was something about it. I was listening to it in the car on the way over here today, And like when that section of the song came on, it just kind of hit me right in the feels and right in the heart. And I was like, it stood out big time for me.
Yeah.
And I was even considering that piano lick to be like part of my riff city too.
I can see it. I can see it. That's a pretty cool riff. Like yeah. If we're talking like best riffs on the album, I can definitely see it.
I've always just been a sucker for those tunes that go from way up and bring it way down and then go way up again. And like it hit that formula for me. Fair enough. For a personal thing, that's one for me. Yeah. A hole in the world.
A hole in the world. the title is still kind of funny to this day. I'm like, what does that even mean? Oh, man.
I keep thinking of the Deftones one, like a hole in the earth.
Yeah, I know. Get away, just drive, right? No, I'm just kidding.
That's
just kidding.
The other two.
I know.
Yeah. That's for another day.
Yeah, that is. That will be another day. And definitely when you're next time you crawl my window, we'll be talking about that.
when my suspension's up.
Yeah, yeah. My second pick was actually Standing on the Edge of Summer. And I was kind of thinking about, I guess probably the same thing you were thinking, like that in my opinion is like pretty good as far as like one of the softer songs on the album. It's maybe not super soft. It's still got like that heavy drive with like just the, you know, driving chords, right? But it's slower. It doesn't have that much like,
I love, they have like this little clean guitar picking riff on top of the heavy distorted riff that kind of gives it that like summery glassy feel of,
yeah, do-no-ne-no,
right? Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, I actually don't know if I know the chords to that song. I think I just, right, it's probably something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, or maybe it's,
yeah, something like that.
Right, it's usually those notes if we're talking this scale, right? I that was a wild guess, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is now that I listened to that. I don't know, this song is like one that like really only cracked my top three within like the last couple years, honestly. So it was never really like my favorite song when I originally heard this album, but you know, your tastes kind of change over time. And like maybe like when I probably first heard this album, I was probably like, oh, this song's too pussy to be listening to. Like,
was,
you know,
this
what I mean?
Was always a standout tune for me, to be honest, because I think I was always a pussy back then, I guess.
Well, like we were saying. Jesus. Yeah. Think of my composure.
Can we let's start the show from the top.
Yeah, can we start all over again? All right, welcome back to another episode.
hey, everybody.
Oh, man. No, the intro on this song, though, is just too good. Like the what we were talking about, where it's just the alternate picking over top of like just the clean chords or whatever.
Yeah.
And they carry it through, and like they have that crunchy guitar riff just riding the same two chords. It's so good. And it just sounds amazing, but it really hits the most when it hits those like chords along with like the heavier drum beat. So, and then Jeff's vocals come in and just like perfect, like for that point as well, you know, we're betting on our own lives.
Yeah,
that part's so good.
I wanted to make mention of his voice and his vocal as a whole on this album. It's just like, it's so impressive how he can sing so high. Mm-hmm. Is that the best way to describe it? It's not falsetto, but
No, it's just, he just has like a super high register in general.
Super high register and like, To sing like that, like all the way through this whole record, like it's so impressive. Like I've always been impressed by like singers that can do that, because just I find it like my voice is deep. I got a deep voice.
That's why, right? Because like I have a higher pitch, more like nasally voice. Like
right.
It's really easy. It's easier to sing in that key for me than it is to sing lower.
And it's like the dynamic between like the aggressive music with his higher singing on top of it. It makes for like a cool dynamic between the two.
Yeah,
and he's very good at it.
Yeah.
And like, I listening to the album too, I was like, somebody's got to check on Buddy who's doing the background screaming.
Oh, that's okay.
He's just like, oh my God, is he okay?
Yeah, that's their guitar player. And he always screams like that. And so the ones that sound way worse are actually the lead singer. That's how he screams. So when he screams, are the ones that are like, it sounds like a kid like going through puberty.
Yeah.
But the background like screamer, like the guitar player, when he nails them, you're like, dude, are you all right, man?
Yeah,
like, that's internal pain.
Somebody needs to check on him. That poor man.
Yeah, that poor man. as Matt was once called. Yes. After game 7 one time.
That's an inside joke. Oh, but yeah.
Man. Yeah. No, this song just like utilizes like some cool musical styles though. Like the changing of like time signatures and polyrhythms on like the outro add like a cool depth, right? Like it has like the, you know, I mean, like stuff like that. And that isolated guitar though, just in the sound drop or whatever it is, it's like some like thing, and then it goes right into a full band drop, you know, with a little bit more of a bridge sort of connotation, I guess, on the notes. Like it's like a different key.
Indubitably.
And this song is just cool to me because it can like still be heavy and calm at the same time.
Yeah.
It's very chill, but it also like has those elements like the post-hardcore sound with like the riding the chords and the stuff like that. So
yeah, the summer in the title, like I was driving here today again, like yeah. I said, listen to this album, and it was a very, very beautiful day outside. Nice and warm, sun was shining. And like that song, it did just take me into that great summer headspace of like I had the windows down and it turned up all the way, and it just exuded that summer feeling too for like a rock song. Like there's something about it, like hard to describe, but like it's awesome.
Well, it's just different than the rest of the album. That's yeah. why, like, I think yeah. that's why I like it the most, really.
Yeah.
But what's your number two pick here? What do we got?
Number two for me is Cross Out the Eyes.
Ooh.
There's just something like it feels like this song was like written almost like from the perspective like of a murderer or a killer or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know why, but I like it's just something about it that it's just got this energy to it that I dig.
Yeah.
Especially like the chorus of the Cross Out the Eyes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, that part's super fun.
No, that's like the hook for that song for me that I love so much. It's better you play it on guitar than me try to sing it through the microphone.
Yeah, but no, that's a prime example of that guy screaming. You'd be like, is he okay?
Yeah.
Because when he hits like that Cross Out the Eyes,
yeah,
it's so like brutal. Like,
it's so like, brutal. Yeah. That's like, I was listening to this. I'm like, is that guy okay?
Poor man.
That poor man. But no, this song is like, I think such a good representation of like that post-hardcore sound that Thursday goes for and excels at. And it's like, and that would get the mosh pit in the crowd just absolutely ready to rip each other's faces off.
Yeah, I could see that. Back in 2001, not much going on.
Oh, yeah.
Rip each other apart.
Oh, yeah. There was no Twitter to worry about. It's just getting to open this pit up.
Yeah. Oh, man. But it's funny you say that, because that is actually a pick that I made, but not in this category.
Ooh.
But my final top three track would be Understanding in a Car Crash. And I know it's like, it's a no brainer why it's considered the most popular song on the album. Cause like that energy just straight up to start the song.
Yeah. 100 miles an hour right off the bat.
Just coming in off that slow electronic intro. Like, yeah. You know, just has like a little bit of a musical interlude for the intro, and then just like, bam, right in that song.
Yeah. And that's why, like, every time that's why that was my riff. Cause every time I think of this album, it's that start to the album. Cause every time you push play, that's the first thing that always hit me.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it's just killer.
Well, then it goes right into like those layered, like clean guitars. Right. And this is something interesting. They do it a lot on this album, but like, it's almost like they're playing two different riffs.
Yeah.
Like they're in the same key, but like, it's just like, they were just like, I don't know.
They just intertwine and cross each other. Yeah.
And they're like, I don't know, play them at the same time. How does that sound?
Right? And it works.
It does. It does. Yeah. It does sound really cool. So it's like, but it's like that chaotic style of like sound.
Super chaotic.
And it's a lot of emo bands like used it going forward.
Mm.
That kind of stayed like as a mainstay. Which is cool. I mean, I don't know if they were the first ones to ever do it.
Yeah, I don't know.
But
I like what I hear.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm liking it. Yeah. And another thing I always notice with this song is like the use of like the clean vocals and screaming vocals.
They do like a call and response.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, so it's like kind of like. Yeah, I'm trying to think how the chorus goes now. Now I'm drawing a blank. This happens every time I record.
I know.
And I'm like, I just listened to it earlier.
We get
today.
Like 10 songs going through your head at once almost.
Yeah. But like, yeah, they do like a call and response thing. And I know like Monin did that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So they did like two like a call and like they had a song called like The Last Song I'll Ever Want to Sing. Yeah. So they did like a song like that or whatever. It was just like something like that.
Yeah.
And they were just like, these words are like poison to me. Stay if you can. Stay.
Nice.
Right. And it just came back and forth. And it was like Chris and whatever sing. Yeah. But every time I hear something like that, I always think of this song. Because I'm like, I could have sworn like they were the first ones that I ever heard do that sort of thing. Like the whole call, because that's like a very like emo thing where it's like
the time it takes, yeah. The time it takes to let go.
Yeah. I don't know. This song gives me like a major vibe of like some like Refused influence. Like,
yeah.
It's mostly just like the drums repeating and like the lead guitar line on the chorus. Mm. It just something about the dinner with the heavy drums and like they're like almost like a syncopated rhythm. It's exactly like New Noise. So it sounds exactly like that. You know what I mean? So I can see that. And it's just like an absolute banger emo classic, heavily featured on pretty much any emo playlist. If you go to Spotify and you just type in emo, there's like 7 playlists that are like sponsored by them, and every single one has Understanding a Car Crash in top 5.
Yeah.
Every single one. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's a no-brainer why, and it's just plain simple, just amazing.
Yeah.
Just an amazing song.
Beauty.
I don't know, man.
I guess my last one?
Yeah, go.
I Am the Killer.
Mm-hmm.
That was your Riff City, right?
That was my Riff City.
Yeah, honestly, the beginning of it with almost that, like, like that scream at the beginning, and then, Can you play it for me?
Yeah.
I'm headbanging over here. So killer. Yeah.
What? That song's just so good, just for like even the chorus, right?
And then like they even double it up. It's like when they comes back, it like it almost like intensifies.
Yeah.
Is dan 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 dan
dan dan dan dan dan dan dan dan dan dan dan. That build up like going in like.
Yeah. And then they do the call and the response scream here.
I am the killer. That's the only part I know. I agree. I actually have no idea what they say. It's cool though.
It kicks ass. It's pure chaos and like pure like evil energy around that song or whatever. Especially the way it starts, like I said, with that scream off the beginning. Anyway, people are probably sick of hearing me screaming. Sorry, everybody. But
all good. Just a quick blah.
So I Am the Killer. That's my third one.
Beauty. I think we've kind of pretty much covered most of the songs now already, now that I think about it, but let's throw it to over under and let's see what our picks are. Yeah. So for our over under this week, here's the thing. I don't think Matt's going to like my overrated pick.
It's probably my top song, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was probably it's not. But I have a feeling it's probably your underrated pick. I just have a weird feeling. But my overrated pick for this album was Autobiography of a Nation. That was a guess. That was a guess of mine. I don't know. I for some reason I thought that you were gonna do that. But
didn't read my autobiography.
Not of my nation.
I'll show myself out as soon as we're done here.
Oh man. Jesus. To be honest though, I didn't really even want to give this an overrated pick. But there are 3 songs that could like fit in that spot in terms of popularity. So like it's Understanding in a Car Crash, Autobiography of a Nation, and Standing on the Edge of Summer. Those are like 3 songs that are cited like a lot when we're talking like Thursday and like, you know, we're talking like, you know, overall top Thursday songs. And I don't know why Autobiography of a Nation is even really in there. Cause like out of those 3, it's my least favorite of those.
I would agree, actually.
It's not a bad song, but it's my least favorite out of those 3 for sure.
Yeah.
And it's really not that terrible of a song, but it's just like super overplayed in my opinion. And like that's saying a lot because this album doesn't really get a lot of plays on Spotify or anything.
No,
But like I think it's just one of those songs, like it'll come on. I'll listen to it sometimes, but most of the time it's just getting a you're in the way of Paris and Flames, so I'm just gonna skip right over and go to the next song, right?
Yeah.
So, especially like since it like Concealer's right before that, and that song, that's such a dope song too.
Yeah.
But for my underrated pick this month or this week or this year or century, I'm not sure anymore. My underrated pick is Cross Out the Eyes.
Nice.
So I knew this was like a single, so it's like not super underrated if you're talking like this album. Like it's not like, you know, Hole in the World or something like that, right? Like that would be like more, I guess, underrated technically. Mm. But this song is just like such a wicked tune, plain and simple. Like has like such a high energy right off the bat, right? Right? You know, just with the tom riff and stuff. Yeah. That's a song I actually don't know how to play now that I think of it. It's like really one of the only ones. But it gives me a vibe of like how I originally wrote songs though. Like it just goes into like different parts for like no rhyme or reason. And like it's like a different, it'll just stop and like someone's just screaming over top of the guitars and just like, okay, now we're in a different time signature and key. You're like, whoa, what happened? Like, yeah. You know what I mean? So, but the best part of the song by far is the chorus. And we talked about that earlier, right? Yeah. Because it was one of your top threes. And the heavy use of like that triplet rhythm.
Yeah, I love that.
That's so cool. It's my favorite. And of course,
when you're playing guitar and stuff too, like stuff like that's so much fun to play.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, here's the thing is like, at one point in time, every single song I had was just like, that would be like a breakdown. That's how like I understood breakdowns. You know? Yeah. You know, just triplets, throw them in there. Why not?
Hell yeah, brother.
Hell yeah, brother. oh my God. But, this song kind of heavily features as well their signature scream sound, right? The cross out the eyes.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's I'm the Killer. God damn it. Cross out the eyes, blur all the lines. Oh, man. Yeah, they really do legitimately sound like they're screaming their lungs out. That poor man.
That poor man.
And there's also, like, a really awesome build-up bridge where the drummer just, like, rides the snare.
Yeah.
And there's, like, a cool another guitar double lead where it's, like, they're just playing, like, two random riffs just mashed into each other. I kind of like that. And the way it just wraps up with, like, that isolated scream, can't wait.
Yeah.
Right into it like a heavy ass course.
I was parked at a red light today and he's just screaming away and like this lady next to me is like, is that guy okay over there?
That poor man.
That poor man.
Yeah, no, there's, I don't know, something about the way it just ends is like so epic. Memories and flat lines.
Yeah.
So good. But I don't know. It's just an amazing song in general. What about you, Matt? What do you got picked?
This was hard for me because like, I didn't know much about the Thursday scene or...
Yeah.
No, I didn't... When I first really got in this album, bought the album and listened to it a lot, I didn't know anybody else that even liked this band.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't have other buddies that were into them and, like, we'd talk about it or share, like, listen to the album together. So,
yeah.
For overrated, underrated, like, I didn't know what songs were considered big, what songs weren't. So, like, for me, like, it was kind of tough to pick, but I picked Wind Up.
That's a really good pick.
I picked that one for overrated, because
For overrated.
For overrated, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hear it's just like you're not your favorite song on the album.
So yeah.
I get what you're saying.
That was the thing where it's like I don't know overrated. Like it was kind of like just one of the ones that was like not. I found it the most boring of
maybe some of
the songs where it's like kind of just flat the whole way through a bit for me.
Okay.
But it was hard for me to pick because I don't want to say anything bad about any of the songs on this album, really.
No, it is a really good album, so it's hard to really even sit there and pick. I guess, like, if you really want to throw away songs, like, the beginning intro. Like, you know what I mean?
Sure,
like
that. I didn't even count those.
Yeah, like,
I didn't even really count those, right?
I had kind of had that issue with the Refuge, Shape of Punk to Come was the same thing. There's, like, five songs on there that are just dance interludes. I'm like, well, those don't count as songs. Like,
yeah.
They're just interludes. Right? Like, I'm not
So it was hard. It was kind of tough, and, like, I didn't want to pick, like, Paris in Flames or, like, Cross Out the Eyes or Understanding a Car Crash is overrated just because they're the most popular. Because they're great songs, so I didn't want to put them in that category. So I just picked one that like was kind of like the most meh for me.
Yeah.
But just for me personally, obviously like someone else might like it or whatever. But again, it was hard. It's always hard for me to pick the overrated one on an album I like.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't want to say anything bad about any of the tunes, really.
Yeah, I know.
But underrated was a little more fun. I picked Standing on the Edge of Summer for me.
Nice.
Because when I first bought this album, that was the first song that I kind of like marked as like my favorite on the album, like on my first listen or two through.
Yeah.
That was the one that kind of became my go to when I would skip the CD player to like, what song do I want to listen to first?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was the first one for me. And so like hearing it back for the first time in like, God, I don't know how many years today.
Yeah.
It really brought me back to when I first got the Full Collapse on CD and like was listening to it in my car and all that stuff. So for me, underrated is Standing on the Edge of Summer, just because it was my first favorite tune off the album and really brought me back to that time when I first started listening to it back in like 02, 03 or whatever it was.
Well, I'd have to hard agree on that one because it is so different than a lot of the songs on that album.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it's definitely like, you know, top 10 for sure. And, you know, just a great track altogether.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. But the album as a whole, like I really love like the aggressiveness of it. Like the way the singer and like the background vocals are totally like kind of 180 from each other, but complement each other well.
Yeah.
The drums and bass like are mixed so awesomely together. Like the kick drum and the bass are so heavy and they sound crisp and killer.
Yeah.
I just like, and the guitarist, like I said earlier, is like machete chainsaws and machine gun glass bullets. Just like the best way. That's how they teach you in Berkeley. I learned that there. Yeah. that's a real technical term for it, but just what, a Berkeley? Big thing. Yeah. That's what they say. That's what they said in the textbooks. But anyway, but yeah, that's my like summation of so far or whatever.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Let's just wrap it up and go into our final thoughts. I think we've already exhausted this album as much as we can.
Those kind of were my final thoughts.
I know. I just realized
that. Sorry.
All good.
Final toast.
I don't know. So for my final thoughts here, this album to me is like what I think of in terms of Thursday's signature sound. Like, it wasn't the first album I heard. Like I said, I heard War All the Time first, their sophomore album. And that kind of drew me into the band.
Mm.
And then I started going back and listening to Full Collapse. And I was like, oh, this is a way better album. I don't know. Like, that album's cool. But no, this one's way better. And it definitely had, like, a where have you been my whole life sort of scenario. Like, right. when I first heard it, I'm like, where has this been? This is so me. Like, you know, I'm just, you know, 14-year-old Eric with like his hair parted over his face.
Like, that's such a great feeling. Yeah. With music too, is like when you first have that where have you been all my life feeling when you hear a band or an album, because that's the magic of music too, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's what makes it so exciting, like finding a new band or a new album or a new song. Like that's always what you're looking for, is to hear something the first time and being like, oh my God.
Yeah, exactly. And that
it's a special thing.
And that was definitely like this album for me. Cause like I was listening to bands like Hawthorne Heights and stuff like that. Like where it was like, that was that post-hardcore sound, like Senses Fail. They were like, you know, heavily influenced by this album. Right. Mm. It's like, oh, now I get it. Like, you know, these guys are the pioneers. Right.
Right.
So, especially that video for Cross Out the Eyes. I think I watched that like a million times on the Victory Records website. I would just go back. I'm like, put the video section. I'm like, watch Comeback Kid, Wake the Dead, and then let's watch Cross Out the Eyes. Let's go.
Man, I'm trying to think of how I even first heard of Thursday or this album. It had to have been, I don't even really know. It had to have been someone I came across in high school or whatever mentioned it, or I seen it somewhere or whatever. But I took a chance on like buying the actual album at like friggin' Music World or HMV or something one day and like, was not disappointed, and it's kind of stuck with me ever since. So,
well, it's, I mean, like plain and simple, it's just a classic like post-hardcore album or classic emo album. Like you don't really, there's like a certain spot of those that like kind of fit in, and like there's different versions of post-hardcore and emo, different eras. This one kind of transcends all of it. It's just the original. It's the OG. Mm-hmm. You can probably catch most of the songs from this album, like, you know, in heavy rotation on my Spotify. Like if it's coming on pretty much most mixes, cause I listen to this album a lot. It definitely transformed me into the very sad boy you see in front of you, that poor, poor man. It was like a huge part of my listening and like, not to mention like my music writing influence, like the whole idea of that, those D to, you know, D to, what is that? B flat. Right. Cross Out the Eyes is, you know, just that essentially, you know what I mean? So, I don't know. It's just one of those albums that like will always stick out to me as like just like a classic.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's up there with Shape of Punk to Come by The Refused. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to compare it to that album, but that's the closest thing I could think of, because it's like just a band that's so unapologetically itself, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, yeah, I'm like, that's about as close as you're gonna get to it.
Good stuff, pal.
Yeah, good stuff. But we're still alive here, pal. So I don't know what's happening anymore. We've literally been in this room recording for like 4 hours
because
we did AWTF right before this, so like that was like 2 hours long, and now we're doing this. And how long we've been going on this? Oh my god, 52 minutes.
We're podcast drunk right now.
Yeah. So we're having way too long a day here. Let's just wrap up this episode. And Matt, do you have anybody or anything you'd like to thank?
Thanks for allowing me back on the show, Eric, after what happened last time. I'm just kidding. Thanks for having me over, man. It was always a pleasure to talk music with you or wrestling or whatever we're doing. Thursday, Full Collapse, great choice. Big album that meant a lot to me growing up. So right in my wheelhouse. Thanks, brother. Appreciate it. And hopefully I'll get the hot tag in here again one day.
Yeah, when we do White Pony around the fur, like we've
absolutely
discussed. Exactly. And if you want, you can follow me on twitch.tv/erke90 or erke90, where I will be playing WWE 2K23 until next year. When 2K24 comes out.
When Fight Forever comes out.
Yeah, when Fight Forever comes out. Well, that's 2 years from now. But they'll pretty much have my bank account on file for that.
When's that game coming out?
I know. But also, if you like, you can come check us out on Dark Side of the Elite. We do a show called AWTF. We'll be on SNME Radio Patreon, anywhere you can pretty much find us. I know I just did the first video with those guys for the new show Draw Straws for Raw or whatever it's called. And I pulled the third week, so we'll see how I'm sure my episode will be out, but we're gonna do a 2K23 sim on the next one, so hopefully that's out by now. And go check it out. It'll be a Patreon exclusive now going forward for those videos, so definitely interesting to check out. And if you want, you know, to be part of the process, why not, right?
Don't you dare miss it.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess until next time, when we can pick another sad album to talk about, or maybe a happy album, maybe. Yeah, we'll see. If the Leafs win, it'll be a happy album.
Oh my god. With the Leafs lose, we're doing Nine Inch Nails, The Fragile.
Yeah, the downward spiral.
The downward spiral, yeah. Oh,
but I guess until next time, peace out.